Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 726, The Coctopus, the Tea Party Movement Manifests Classical Fascism. This program is being recorded on October 17th of the year 2010. We're going to plunge right in where we left off at the end of Side 1. I have been reading into the record the vast bulk of an article from the New Yorker magazine of August 30th of 2010. The article has received a fair amount of publicity, happily, and a fair amount of circulation. However, I thought for those of you who have not read it yourselves or have not heard about it, I thought it might be worth going into at length and in detail. The article is called Covert Operations. Again, it's by Jane Mayer. It's from the New Yorker magazine of August 30th of 2010. It's about the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch, the son of John Birch Society kingpin Fred Koch. And it basically is about how the Kochs are funding the institutions which are providing the Tea Parties with their ideological agenda. And that ideological agenda is basically a corporatist ideological agenda, which obviously is consistent with and benefits the Koch brothers' enormous business operations. But as we're going to see, their translation of their corporatist philosophy into a grassroots movement is not only in a classic manifestation of the paradigm of traditional fascism or corporatism, as Mussolini called it, but it really represents a fundamental perversion of political ideology, because the people who are supporting this movement at the grassroots level are the people who ultimately are going to get crushed when these corporatist philosophies bear fruit. Just witness what happened when the Reagan and Bush years finally bore the fruit that many people had been warning they must, namely the deregulation that produced the 2008 financial collapse. Well, if you like that, there is an old military slang acronym called BOHICA. It's an abbreviation for bend over. Here it comes again. And it's coming courtesy of the Kochs. Turning once again to this article from the New Yorker magazine, and after the 1980 election when their Libertarian Party essentially went no place, only the Kochs know precisely how much they spent on politics. Public records show that between 1998 and 2008, the Charles G. Koch Charitable Foundation spent more than $48 million. The Claude R. Lamb Charitable Foundation, which is controlled by Charles Koch and his wife, along with two company employees and an accountant, spent more than $28 million. The David H. Koch Charitable Foundation spent more than $120 million. Meanwhile, since 1998, Koch Industries has spent more than $50 million on lobbying. Separately, the company's political action committee, Koch PAC, has donated some $8 million to political campaigns, more than 80% of it to Republicans. So far in 2010, Koch Industries leads all other energy companies in political contributions, as it has since 2006. In addition, during the dozen years, the Kochs and other family members have personally spent more than $2 million on political contributions. In the second quarter of 2010, David Koch was the biggest individual contributor to the Republican Governors Association with a $1 million donation. Other gifts by the Kochs may be untraceable. Federal tax law permits anonymous personal donations to politically active nonprofit groups. In recent decades, members of several industrial dynasties have spent parts of their fortunes on a conservative agenda. In the 1980s, the Olin family, which owns a chemicals and manufacturing conglomerate, became known for funding right-leaning thinking in academia, particularly in law schools. And during the 90s, Richard Mellon Scaife, a descendant of Andrew Mellon, spent millions attempting to discredit Bill Clinton. Ari Rabin-Hovd, a vice president at the Democratic-leaning website Media Matters, said that the Kochs' effort is unusual in its marshalling of corporate and personal funds. Quote, "Their role in terms of financial commitments is staggering," unquote. Of course, Democrats give money, too. Their most prominent donor, the financier George Soros, runs a foundation, the Open Society Institute, that has spent as much as $100 million a year in America. Soros has also made generous private contributions to various Democratic campaigns, including Obama's. But Michael Vachon, his spokesman, argued that Soros's giving is transparent and that, quote, none of his contributions are in the service of his own economic interests, unquote. The Kochs, by contrast, have given millions of dollars to nonprofit groups that criticize environmental regulation and support lower taxes for industry. Gusty Zarega, the former friend, suggested that the Kochs' youthful idealism about libertarianism had largely devolved into a rationale for corporate self-interest. He said of Charles, quote, perhaps he has confused making money with freedom, unquote. Some critics have suggested that the Kochs' approach has subverted the purpose of tax-exempt giving. By law, charitable foundations must conduct exclusively nonpartisan activities that promote the public welfare. A 2004 report by the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, a watchdog group, described the Kochs' foundations as being self-serving, concluding, quote, these foundations give money to nonprofit organizations that do research and advocacy on issues that impact the profit margin of Coke Industries, unquote. The Kochs have gone well beyond their immediate self-interest, however, funding organizations that aim to push the country in a libertarian direction. Among the institutions that they have subsidized are the Institute for Justice, which files lawsuits opposing state and federal regulations, the Institute for Humane Studies, which underwrites libertarian academics, and the Bill of Rights Institute, which promotes a conservative slant on the Constitution. Many of the organizations funded by the Kochs employ specialists who write position papers that are subsequently quoted by politicians and pundits. David Koch has acknowledged that the family exerts tight ideological control. Quote, if we're going to give a lot of money, we'll make darn sure they spend it in a way that goes along with our intent, he told Doherty. And if they make a wrong turn and start doing things we don't agree with, we withdraw funding, unquote. The Koch subsidization of a pro-corporate movement fulfills in many ways the vision laid out in a secret 1971 memo that Lewis Powell, then a Virginia attorney, wrote 2 months before he was nominated to the Supreme Court by Richard Nixon. The anti-war movement, by the way, for younger listeners, that's the anti-Vietnam War movement, the anti-war movement had turned its anger on defense contractors such as Dow Chemical, and Ralph Nader was leading a public interest crusade against corporations. Powell, writing a report for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, urged American companies to fight back. The greatest threat to free enterprise, he warned, was not communism or the New Left, but rather, quote, respectable elements of society, intellectuals, journalists, and scientists. To defeat them, he wrote, business leaders needed to wage a long-term, unified campaign to change public opinion. Charles Koch seems to have approached both business and politics with the deliberation of an engineer. To bring about social change, he told Doherty, requires a strategy, unquote, that is vertically and horizontally integrated, unquote, spanning from idea to creation to public policy development to education to grassroots organizations to lobbying to litigation to political action, unquote. The project, he admitted, was extremely ambitious. We have a radical philosophy, he said. In 1977, the Kochs provided the funds to launch the nation's first libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. According to the Center for Public Integrity, between 1986 and 1993, the Koch family gave $11 million to the institute. Today, Cato has more than 100 full-time employees, and its experts and policy papers are widely quoted and respected by the mainstream media. It describes itself as nonpartisan, and its scholars have at times been critical of both parties, but it has consistently pushed for corporate tax cuts, reductions in social services, and laissez-faire economic environmental policies. When President Obama, in a 2008 speech, described the science on global warming as beyond dispute, unquote, the Cato Institute took out a full-page ad in the Times to contradict him. Cato's resident scholars have relentlessly criticized political attempts to stop global warming as expensive, ineffective, and unnecessary. Ed Crane, the Cato Institute's founder and president, told me that, quote, global warming theories give the government more control of the economy, unquote. Cato scholars have been particularly energetic in promoting the ClimateGate scandal. Last year, private emails of climate scientists at the University of East Anglia in England were mysteriously leaked, and their exchanges appeared to suggest a willingness to falsify data in order to buttress the idea that global warming is real. In the 2 weeks after the emails went public, one Cato scholar gave more than 20 media interviews trumpeting the alleged scandal. But five independent inquiries since exonerated the researchers, and nothing was found in their emails or data to discredit the scientific consensus on global warming. Bear in mind that leak was from WikiLeaks, who we spent two programs about. Continuing. Nevertheless, the controversy succeeded in spreading skepticism about climate change. Even though the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration recently issued a report concluding that the evidence for global warming is unequivocal, more Americans are convinced than at any time since 1997 that scientists have exaggerated the seriousness of global warming. The Kochs promote this statistic on their company's website, but do not mention the role that their funding has played in fostering such doubt. In a 2002 memo, the Republican political consultant Frank Luntz wrote that so long as, quote, voters believe there is no consensus about global warming within the scientific community, the status quo would prevail. The key for opponents of environmental reform, he said, was to question the science, a public relations strategy that the tobacco industry has effectively used for years to forestall regulation. The Kochs have funded many sources of environmental skepticism, such as the Heritage Foundation, which has argued that, quote, scientific facts gathered in the past 10 years do not support the notion of catastrophic human-made warming, unquote. The brothers have given money to more obscure groups, too, such as the Independent Women's Forum, which opposes the presentation of global warming as a scientific fact in American public schools. Until 2008, that group was run by Nancy Fotenauer, a former lobbyist for Koch Industries. Mary Beth Jarvis, a vice president of a Koch subsidiary, is on the group's board. Naomi Oreskes, a professor of history and science studies at the University of California, San Diego, is the co-author of Merchants of Doubt, a new book that chronicles various attempts by American industry to manipulate public opinion on science. She noted that the Kochs, as the heads of a company with refineries and pipelines, have a lot at stake, unquote. She added again, quoting, if the answer is to phase out fossil fuels, a different group of people are going to be making money, so we shouldn't be surprised that they're fighting tooth and nail, unquote. David Koch told New York that he was unconvinced that global warming has been caused by human activity. Even if it has been, he said, the heating of the planet will be beneficial, resulting in longer growing seasons in the Northern Hemisphere. Quote, the Earth will be able to support enormously more people because far greater land area will be available to produce food, he said. In the mid-1980s, the Kochs provided millions of dollars to George Mason University in Arlington, Virginia, to set up yet another think tank. Now known as the Mercatus Center, it promotes itself as the world's premier university source for market-oriented ideas, bridging the gap between academic ideas and real-world problems, unquote. Financial records show that the Koch family foundations have contributed more than $30 million to George Mason, much of which has gone to the Mercatus Center, a nonprofit organization. Quote, it's ground zero for deregulation policy in Washington, Rob Stein, the Democratic strategist, said. It is an unusual arrangement. Quote, George Mason is a public university and receives public funds, Stein noted. Virginia is hosting an institution that the Kochs practically control. The founder of the Mercatus Center is Richard Fink, formerly an economist. Fink heads Koch Industries' lobbying operation in Washington. In addition, he is the president of the Charles G. Koch Charitable Foundation, the president of the Claude R. Lamb Charitable Foundation, a director of the Fred C. and Mary R. Koch Foundation, and a director and co-founder with David Koch of the Americans for Prosperity Foundation. Fink, with his many titles, has become the central nervous system of the Coctopus. He appears to have supplanted Ed Crane, the head of the Cato Institute, as the brothers' main political lieutenant. Though David remains on the board at Cato, Charles Koch has fallen out with Crane. Associates suggested to me that Crane had been insufficiently respectful of Charles's management philosophy, which he distilled into a book called The Science of Success and trademarked under the name Market-Based Management, or MBM. In the book, Charles recommends instilling a company's corporate culture with the competitiveness of the marketplace. Koch describes MBM as a holistic system containing, quote, five dimensions, vision, virtue, and talents, knowledge processes, decision rights, and incentives, unquote. A top Cato Institute official told me that Charles, quote, thinks he's a genius, unquote. He's the emperor, and he's convinced he's wearing clothes, unquote. Fink, by contrast, has been far more embracing of Charles's ideas. Fink, like the Kochs, declined to be interviewed. At a 1995 conference for philanthropists, Fink adopted the language of economics when speaking about the Mercatus Center's purpose. He said that grantmakers should use think tanks and political action groups to convert intellectual raw materials into policy products, unquote. The Wall Street Journal has called the Mercatus Center, quote, the most important think tank you've never heard of, and notes that 14 of the 23 regulations that President George W. Bush placed on a hit list had been first suggested by Mercatus scholars. Fink told the paper that the Kochs have, quote, other means of fighting their battles, unquote, and that the Mercatus Center does not actively promote the company's private interests. But Thomas McGarrity, a law professor at the University of Texas who specializes in environmental issues, told me that, quote, Koch has been constantly in trouble with the EPA, and Mercatus has constantly hammered on the agency, unquote. An environmental lawyer who has clashed with the Mercatus Center called it, quote, a means of laundering economic aims, unquote. The lawyer explained the strategy, quote, you take corporate money and give it to a neutral-sounding think tank, which, quote, hires people with pedigrees and academic degrees who put out credible-seeming studies, but they all coincide perfectly with the economic interests of their funders, unquote. In 1997, for instance, the EPA moved to reduce surface ozone, a form of pollution caused in part by emissions from oil refineries. Susan Dudley, an economist who became a top official at the Mercatus Center, criticized the proposed rule. The EPA, she argued, had not taken into account that smog-free skies would result in more cases of skin cancer. She projected that if pollution were controlled, it would cause up to 11,000 additional cases of skin cancer each year. In 1999, the District of Columbia Circuit Court took up Dudley's smog argument. Evaluating the EPA rule, the court found that the EPA had, quote, explicitly disregarded the possible health benefits of ozone, unquote. In another part of the opinion, the court ruled 2-1 that the EPA had overstepped its authority in calibrating standards for ozone emissions. As the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank, revealed, the judges in the majority had previously attended legal junkets on a Montana ranch that were arranged by the Foundation for Research on Economics and the Environment, a group funded by Koch family foundations. The judges have claimed that the ruling was unaffected by their attendance. Ideas don't happen on their own, Matt Kibbe, the president of FreedomWorks, a Tea Party advocacy group, told me. Throughout history, ideas need patrons, unquote. The Koch brothers, after helping to create Cato and Mercatus, concluded that think tanks alone were not enough to effect change. They needed a mechanism to deliver those ideas to the street and to attract the public support. In 1984, David Koch and Richard Fink created yet another organization, and Kibbe joined them. The group, Citizens for a Sound Economy, seemed like a grassroots movement, but according to the Center for Public Integrity, it was sponsored principally by the Kochs, who provided $7.9 million between 1986 and 1993. Its mission, Kibbe said, was to take these heavy ideas and translate them for mass America. We read the same literature Obama did about nonviolent revolutions, Saul Alinsky, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. We studied the ideas of the Boston Tea Party as an example of nonviolent social change. We learned we needed boots on the ground to sell ideas, not candidates, unquote. Within a few years, the group had mobilized 50 paid field workers in 26 states to rally voters behind the Koch's agenda. David and Charles, according to one participant, were very controlling, very top-down. You can't build an organization with them because they run it, unquote. Around this time, the brothers faced a political crisis. In 1989, the Senate Select Committee on Indian Affairs investigated their business and released a scathing report accusing Koch Oil of, quote, a widespread and sophisticated scheme to steal crude oil from Indians and others through fraudulent mismeasuring, unquote. The Kochs admitted that they had improperly taken $31 million worth of crude oil, but said that it had been accidental. Charles Koch told committee investigators that oil measurement is, quote, a very uncertain art, unquote. To defend its reputation, Koch Industries hired Robert Strauss, then a premier Washington lobbyist. The company soon opened an office in the city. A grand jury was convened to investigate the allegations, but it eventually disbanded without issuing any criminal charges. According to the Senate report, after the committee hearings, Koch operatives delved into the personal lives of committee staffers, even questioning an ex-wife. Senate investigators were upset by the Koch's tactics. Kenneth Bolland, the counsel to the Senate committee, said, quote, these people have amassed such unaccountable power, unquote. By 1993, when Bill Clinton became president, Citizens for a Sound Economy had become a prototype for the kind of corporate-backed opposition campaigns that had proliferated during the Obama era. The group waged a successful assault on Clinton's proposed BTU tax on energy, for instance, running advertisements, staging media events, and targeting opponents. And it mobilized anti-tax rallies outside the Capitol, rallies that NPR described as, quote, designed to strike fear into the hearts of wavering Democrats, unquote. Dan Glickman, a former Democratic congressman from Wichita who supported the BTU tax, recalled, quote, I'd been in Congress 18 years. The Kochs actually engaged against me and funded my opponent. They used a lot of resources and effort, their employees too, unquote. Glickman suffered a surprise defeat. I can't prove it, but I think I was probably their victim, he said. The Kochs continued to disperse their money, creating slippery organizations with generic-sounding names, and this made it difficult to ascertain the extent of their influence in Washington. In 1990, Citizens for a Sound Economy created a spin-off group, Citizens for the Environment, which called acid rain and other environmental problems myths, unquote. When the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette investigated the matter, it discovered that the spin-off group had no citizen membership of its own, unquote. In 1997, another Senate investigation began looking into what a minority report called, quote, an audacious plan to pour millions of dollars in contributions into Republican campaigns nationwide without disclosing the amount or the source in order to evade campaign finance laws. A shell corporation, Triad Management, had paid more than $3 million for attack ads in 26 House races and 3 Senate races. More than half of the advertising money came from an obscure nonprofit group, the Economic Education Trust. The Senate committee's minority report suggested that the, quote, trust was financed in whole or in part by Charles and David Koch of Wichita, Kansas, unquote. The brothers were suspected of having secretly paid for the attack ads, most of which aired in states where Koch Industries did business. In Kansas, where Triad Management was especially active, the funds may have played a decisive role in 4 of 6 federal races. The Kochs, when asked by reporters if they had given the money, refused to comment. In 1998, however, the Wall Street Journal confirmed that a consultant on the Kochs' payroll had been involved in the scheme. Charles Lewis of the Center for Public Integrity described the scandal as historic. Triad was the first time a major corporation used a cutout, a front operation, in a threatening way. Koch Industries was the poster child of a company run amok, unquote. During the Clinton administration, the energy industry faced increasing scrutiny and regulation. In the mid-90s, the Justice Department filed two lawsuits against Koch Industries, claiming that it was responsible for more than 300 oil spills, which had released an estimated 3 million gallons of oil into lakes and rivers. The penalty was potentially as high as $214 million. In a settlement, Koch Industries paid a record $30 million civil fine and agreed to spend $5 million on environmental projects. In 1999, a jury found Koch Industries guilty of negligence and malice in the deaths of two Texas teenagers in an explosion that resulted from a leaky underground butane pipeline. In 2001, the company paid an undisclosed settlement. And in the final months of the Clinton presidency, the Justice Department leveled a 97-count indictment against the company for covering up the discharge of 91 tons of benzene, a carcinogen, from the refinery in Corpus Christi, Texas. The company was liable for $350 million in fines, and four Koch employees faced up to 35 years in prison. The Koch Petroleum Group eventually pleaded guilty to a $1 million fine. David Ullman, a career prosecutor who at the time headed the Environmental Crime Section at the Justice Department, described the suit as, quote, one of the most significant cases ever brought under the Clean Air Act, unquote. He added again, quoting, environmental crimes are almost always motivated by economics and arrogance, and in the Koch case, there was a healthy dose of both, unquote. During the 2000 election campaign, Koch Industries spent some $900,000 to support the candidacies of George W. Bush and other Republicans. During the Bush years, Koch industry and other fossil fuel companies enjoyed remarkable prosperity. The 2005 energy bill, which Hillary Clinton dubbed the Dick Cheney lobbyist energy bill, offered enormous subsidies and tax breaks for energy companies. The Kochs have cast themselves as deficit hawks, but according to a study by Media Matters, their companies have benefited from nearly $100 million in government contracts since 2000. In 2004, Citizens for a Sound Economy was accused of illegitimately throwing its weight behind Bush's re-election. The group's Oregon branch had attempted to get Ralph Nader on the presidential ballot in order to dilute Democratic support for John Kerry. Critics argued that it was illegal for a tax-exempt nonprofit organization to donate its services for partisan political purposes. A complaint was filed with the Federal Election Commission. It was dismissed. And the article goes on to describe just how persevering the Kochs have been. Grover Norquist, who holds a weekly meeting for conservative leaders in Washington, including representatives from Americans for Prosperity, told me that last summer's raucous rallies were pivotal in undermining Obama's agenda. Skipping down. When Obama was strong, the Chamber of Commerce said we can work with the Obama administration, but that changed when thousands of people went into the street and terrorized congressmen. August is what changed it. Now that Obama is weak, people are getting tough. Unquote. And of the Koch brothers, Jane Mayer goes on to say, the Koch sense of imperilment is somewhat puzzling. Income inequality in America is greater than it has been since the 1920s, and since the 70s, the tax rates of the wealthiest have fallen more than those of the middle class. Yet, the brothers' message has evidently resonated with voters. A recent poll found that 55% of Americans agreed that Obama is a socialist. And so again, with these grassroots people out there implementing a corporatist agenda, the Cocteau and the Tea Party is manifesting a classic fascist paradigm. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 726, The Cocteau, the Tea Party Movement Manifests Classical Fascism. This is being recorded on October 17th of the year 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.